Calibrate your thinking before continuing. I have stolen things. I'm not proud of that. I've fought. I've lied and told the truth. I've experienced tragic loss and pain, and I've experienced pleasure and fulfillment. I've had bad examples and good examples. I've bounced around in the cheap seats and napped in the lap of luxury. And yet nothing I have thought, said, or done is more important than being present with my family to share those experiences with them, that they might have the learning of my lifetime to add to the learning of their own. John Dale. Like most of us, I've had struggles and challenges. I grew up, for the most part, in a single wide trailer with a block wall hiding it from the main road. Both of my parents are blue-collar types. As a child and young man, I watched my mother go through 3 divorces. I failed 2 of my first 4 courses in college, and I often struggle with anxiety, depression, and self-doubt. Yet I've mustered the courage and patience to write this book. And when you finish reading, I hope you'll brim with a great new idea to create and learn within your own family. Disclaimer: this book is about our family's journey. I'm writing this book mostly for my children so they have some notes and pointers for some of the big important ideas we covered in our educational journey together. Through the words in this book, for the most part, I'm speaking colloquially in monologue to my 3 homeschool students. Not everything we did in our homeschool will work for everyone else. We made mistakes and we did our best to correct them. While I believe you can learn a lot from this book, it is not an instruction manual, so keep that in mind. Read, research, and carefully make decisions for you and your family and take responsibility for them. Understand that the way the information is presented is the way I taught it. I taught from my perspective, which means introducing a lot of my own personal anecdotal experiences into the lesson presentations. I'm not the final arbiter of all that is truthful, but I did act in good faith, have a higher education of my own, and a wide breadth of life experiences to backstop my own understanding, which I did my best to impart to my children, and which I will do my best to impart and convey in this book. I believe a teacher must be learned, which is why this book, among other things, is an important collection of data points for the family educators to consider. At times you'll find the reading somewhat difficult, despite my best efforts to simplify some of the concepts. But life is complicated, so we should expect good descriptions to be complex at times. Learn from our successes and mistakes. Realize, however, that much of what is in this book is opinion, conjecture, and supposition, and I reiterate, you should do your best to independently verify the material presented here before taking any action or making any decisions for you or for your family. This book is intended to inspire you to use your own mind and ideas to help give you and your children a reasonable chance to adapt and thrive in a world that moves fast compared to the stagnant public school system that is frozen in time from its own apathy and falling on itself from its own weight. The system's demise has a lot of warning signs, but the damage done to our children can happen before a single brick crumbles. Our monolithic educational institutions invariably fall short for a majority attending for mostly straightforward reasons. Upgrade the food, add more recess. However, one glaring reason for its many, many shortcomings is the absence of the family, especially the father. Modern living encourages atomic family absenteeism. Mom and dad get a hall pass, give the best of themselves to a corporation, and outsource child rearing. Yet, it was the family farm model, with the entire family working, eating, and living together like a military unit, that gave the country potent growth, innovation, and strength through world conflict. With all the sacrifice and difficulty you'd expect, our family steered clear of public school from the beginning as we worked hard to retrofit an internet-enabled homeschool with a family farm model. 19 years of experience won't fit into a single book, but it is a straightforward window with a view into how we took full responsibility for our children on our own. For better or for worse, we will inspire and inform others about our true stories, including those quote-unquote others, still wrapped up in the multi-billion dollar U.S. schooling racket. To be frank, I'm not writing this book for idiots, and reading things twice to fully understand is okay. I reread every important passage dozens of times through the writing and editorial processes for this book. Now, on to the targeted audiences for our book. Homeschool parents and teachers, school teachers, school administrators, private school teachers, administrators, and boards, politicians, lawyers, and kids who have been through homeschool or people who are curious about it. I'm sure some will claim evidence presented in this book is absolute proof of the dangers of homeschool. Others will golf clap for our heroic moral victory in the face of an evil machine with endless money. I'm sure a handful of people will claim total victory for homeschool. Still others will see, like I did, that what matters is making robust, moral humans who can defend themselves and make beautiful and righteous things freely while advancing our understanding of the universe around us. I believe the public schools are falling short and wasting our money, but I also grew up in the technocratic age of the singularity and widespread manufacturing automation. Robots can make the robots that make the stuff. So why do we even have things like McDonald's and KB Homes, who employ people to do things robots can do better 24 hours a day with no complaints? Yet. I designed this book to be required reading for informed opinions on opportunities in U.S. education. After reading, I want the reader to be exceptionally informed regarding opportunities to more efficiently adapt our education cash flows to the bounding opportunities within properly funded family education. I posit that humans learn best in the pocket of familial reproach, tenderness, bonds, and care. You don't even have to understand these words to instinctively know that when mom and dad give the best of themselves and the bulk of their time for their children, the children have an opportunity to learn to avoid life's pitfalls from a bonded elder family member who cares more than the school system does. I don't claim to have all the answers, but as you read this book and continue or start your own educational journeys, also known to many as simply being an atomic family farm, please realize that it is important to seek out many perspectives on something as important as the education of your family. With this book, I'd like to set you out on your journey with a good idea of the risks and rewards of self/family education. The pillars of our homeschool are as follows. You are responsible for your learning. Be creative. Take risks. Do project-based learning and work. Get the food right. And limit bad influences. The risks are that society comes crashing down on you for having the audacity to question the wisdom of the ages. Meanwhile, the pool of these dissident fringe outliers continues to produce manufacturing and economic innovation and artistic beauty. This book is an informal, raw research guide to the architecture of consciousness as I witnessed it over 19 years as a homeschool teacher and administrator. It was written for anyone wishing to explore how people grow and become who they are from a real-world, nonfiction case study. In this book, since I was administrator and teacher, I can provide perspective and depth behind the projects that make up our homeschool, which is more aptly named family education. It is true, I am writing this book for you, the reader, but I'm also writing this book for my children and descendants to remind and educate them about this incredible journey that our family took together, how brave and courageous we were in the face of this latest sordid chapter of humanity. This is our time to turn the corner of human history and shun the yoke of a past motivated by the instinct to dominate other humans, driven by the experimental application of intricate pharma, and driven by a last resort of creating the fog of war to cover up and ignore the worst of human tendencies. Despite not having yet begun to fight for what they believe, I want my descendants to know and understand the origins of their minds. My chest burns and fills with passion and love, a message to my mind that the important objective of human freedom should be accomplished at this moment in time, above all else. And yet, human freedom must be perpetually recaptured. Our homeschool has hit the mark despite what forces might have aligned against us in a system designed for the enslavement of minds, and thus, enslavement of bodies. I'm writing this book because I'm a free man. I'm obstinate, and I have an undying love for humanity, especially for my direct family. Honestly, however, I also need the work and could really use the money. This book will be stylistically very similar to the format and content of the lectures I gave my children during our homeschool. It is impossible to not share some of yourself in words without tapping into your own experiences. So at times it will seem like an autobiography. The chapters of the book are not simply dull narrations of events. Rather, the goal in writing was to piece together sequences of events along with important context and logic to share the motivations behind how we conducted our family farm type education. The book will seem disjointed at times, but remember, our team was perpetually on the hunt for real-world projects. When we found one, we'd often drop everything to work together to achieve an outcome. If the book jumps around topically, don't worry. That's true to form for how we lived it. I wish I had a dollar for every time I heard, "How will they be socialized?" Speaking with your kids, having them interact with people at the store and library, having them play sports, and going to park playdates with friends are all simple solutions. You will encounter opposition to pulling kids out of government institutional schools. We encountered opposition from family, educators, teachers, politicians, friends, and others. I don't recall many people who truly supported our decision to family educate in the way we saw fit. Now, 19 years later, it seems we have more information to consider. Back then, we were making predictions. Now, we have the truth. Either way, we were correct to pursue independent family education our way. Without full immersion and complete commitment, taking all the consequences, the results would not be so clear, so legion, and so obvious. This book would not be so valuable. I would be pursuing a lucrative career as a German-speaking musician philosopher. Now, it's up to the system how it might retaliate. Will it adopt these evident truths and remake itself? Will it try to cover up the truth and erase the minds of humanity over a few generations using mind control and social engineering again? Perhaps the most important ramification of homeschooling is that you become a target of very powerful government-sponsored agencies and their adjuncts who have a vested interest in the huge public school system. Teachers' unions, designers and builders of schools, administrators of schools and departments across the U.S. education system. These institutions have the power, working with other federal agencies, to use your tax dollars to pry open the privacy of your home. As justification, they'll say, "We have to monitor the children." In the process, private information floods into black markets who use the information streams to slowly wring the economic value out of your family. Our family farm education would be far better off if these agencies would write us the check instead of creating a fake job to quote-unquote monitor us, presumably to obtain information that is not being published in this book, I suppose. The surveillance apparatus is a drag on every worthwhile initiative happening within the Republic. It is a viscosity in our culture. It's a cancer on our family bonds. It doesn't solve problems. It creates them because the back door is open and every manner of criminal organization is coming through. Its stated purpose is safety, but really, it's providing recon to globalist criminal cartels in real time who use the access to systematically steal and even sometimes shred the fabric of our civilization. When we decided to family educate, I was under the impression that markets in the United States were free and fair. I studied MIS and entrepreneurship at the University of Arizona, and I had recently graduated. One of my main goals early on in our education program was to teach my children how to create residual income streams efficaciously and ethically using entrepreneurship. Finding some problem that exists in the marketplace, fixing the problem, and charging for the service meets these criteria, assuming adherence with law and honest messaging. Over time, though, I discovered that having a superior product in the software industry guarantees failure? American engineers are not supported with capital. They are manipulated and exploited, stolen from, and arbitraged. Right now in American IT, if you aren't willing to do anti-constitutional things, you won't even be employed to train your Indian replacement, much less enjoy support, employment, capital, and opportunity in a free market governed by constitutional principles. The country's 401ks are invested against U.S. IT workers' interests, stealing from those workers and redirecting the industry and its future-proof profits to a foreign nation. I leaned into the family education model as a countermeasure to India's capture of the hearts and minds of U.S. stockholders. Unfortunately, my wife and I struggled for hours at a time, planning, working, and borrowing our way through a series of crises while keeping our family education model intact. The success and progress of the kids is important. We could achieve results quickly with focus, even during uncertain times, allowing more independent study, education, directed by the girls themselves, and freeing up our entire family to closely examine the civic process in particular. Seeing crises resolved is good, as a matter of course, for the kids. I'm relieved we stayed the course. Compromises can be made. Good information and reason and logic and common sense play important roles in decision-making. We started our homeschool teaching symbols with foam letters and numbers in the bathtub. I had visions of and eagerly anticipated what our children would and could become. I daydreamed about what it would be like to have conversations with them about the things that mattered most to us. Now our children are free, creative, compassionate, and intelligent thinkers, and we're faced with what to do next. Before we proceed to the next phase as a family, I must recount and document what we've done. When we started, there were two key decision points that drove my relentless advocacy: the food and the influences. Projecting these two considerations out over time gave me a ray of hope that getting these things right would give competitive advantage enough to justify the decision later. I surmised that if we got these two very important things correct, we would automatically do better than the bottom 50% of public school classrooms I'd seen growing up. Setting this goal/expectation early was helpful. I refer back to it often. Right now, on average, 5% of kids don't even finish high school. Most that do finish high school scrape by with low averages. I believe those that do excel at public school have parents that behave much like we do. They're interested, involved, and close with their children. But as the public schools get worse, work hours get longer, debt increases, and the cost of living goes up, this parental behavior diminishes, and even more pressure is put on parents and school employees to just deliver people as a product. I discovered that our homeschool made the most progress by focusing our energy around a series of real-world projects. I didn't plan these out meticulously, but rather, when opportunity knocked and an interesting, attainable, uniquely real-world possibility surfaced, I seized upon that opportunity because real-world experience is the best teacher. And though I spent much of my time rousting the team to help them understand those real-world situations, it always paid off in the end. The value of such endeavors was always straightforward to justify: fun, interesting, educational, quality time. Most of the time, looking up from the screen was all it took to find a worthy and interesting real-world project that would keep us all engaged for days, weeks, months, and even years. Memorization of rote facts was not as important as developing a big-picture understanding of the world that could facilitate self-guided learning as needed. Most important was to develop powers of observation over time: reason, logic, critical thinking, expression, drawing, art, writing, speaking, singing, and playing music, and objectivity, hard truths. I want to be careful not to paint the picture that our children are perfect or that we have done everything right. But without a doubt, we did do better than the bottom 50% of the average American public school classroom. The analysis I'm looking at does not adjust for the economy of scale enjoyed by the public school system. As more people choose family education, FAMED, the economics will further improve for homeschool as buses stop running, utilities are shut off, and schools are converted to income-generating public squares / resources, assuming their prison-like architectures can be adequately repurposed. The cost to centralize education is hidden and enormous. The 800-pound gorilla in the room is that one huge reason parents must work so hard is to keep paying the flailing Department of Education. Our method of education is dynamic and unfixed, like the world around us. If we are too diligent in fixing our lessons, we risk the lessons we're teaching becoming stale and inapplicable to the world. Some ideas stand time's test, but others are more specific and axiomatic and scientific to trust at this time. This is why it is important to have teachers with life experience who can bring back unique and fresh perspectives, guided by a demonstrably objective morality. Morality, in addition to athletic skill and academic skill and street smarts, is integral to the human pedagogic experience. Any serious educational system must address the question of objective morality. Why should people be good? There is good in this world. There's bad in this world. If you're worried about the bad, you'll be too busy looking over your shoulder to learn, excel, create, and beautify. So, it is in our best interests to be good to one another, so we can have more fun and fulfillment. This is the logical argument for an objective morality respecting the right to life and liberty of other people. The goal of education, in my view, is to prepare young people for a changing world and to introduce them to education methods for dealing with our changing world in a way that creates happiness, contentment, fulfillment, independence, prosperity, freedom, and success. Objective morality is central to these goals, and our philosophical discussions about morality occurred in nearly every project we worked on because it provides cooperative incentive. When people work together, they accomplish more. Economy, lofty goals like space travel, and healthy global food and water systems spring from an effective system of objective morality that protects family, marriage, and other core values. I was raised a Seventh-day Adventist, but I do not go to church, and neither does my family. My wife's family growing up was not religious and did not attend church either. When we decided to homeschool, it was not to indoctrinate our children into a specific church or religious worldview. Moral wisdom, logic, critical thinking, civic engagement, issues of self-governance, and the history of ethics dominated many of our discussions, but it was not driven by biblical fiat or religious dogma. If my children find their way to one worldview or another, it will be their journey, not the result of lifelong social engineering by the people they should be able to trust the most, parents. It has always been important to me to ensure my children struggle and work with ethics and morality the way they might struggle with math or phonics. My belief is that morality is earned, not imposed. At the same time, it is not subjective. Morality is a kind of mathematics that has been neglected and shortcut through the church process. Walk with me for a moment, if you will. Our leaders throughout time have seen the worst of humanity surface and wreak havoc on itself. At the same time, the best of times are typified by abundance, availability, and sanctity of mating pairs, marriage, and morality. See the Ten Commandments. As societies decayed, church-based morality became a stopgap, a finger in the dike, or an entrenchment against overwhelming evil manifest in the hearts of abused, feral people. I believe evil propagates itself, and it must be cleansed from our cultural lines, but it cannot be beaten out of a person, and nor should it. I believe morality can be taught and justified objectively. Subsequently, the battle between good and evil has already been won and lost. I have chosen good. The study of morality was missing from all of the public schools that I attended. I didn't have a single grade school logic and critical thinking class that I can remember. Also missing from those classes were accounting, finance, and law. To me, these conspicuous omissions tie in to the human moral dilemma and put into question our expectations that people should follow the law. The issue of agency and the weight of choice depend upon as fully informed a decision-making public as we can muster. Punishing an intentionally uninformed public is like boxing an armless man. Sure, you're probably going to win, but I wouldn't expect any accolades. In effective family farm education, there is no government or corporate sanctioned duties beyond the rights and responsibilities of parenthood. As a general principle, anybody can be wrong, but reputations for reliability do develop over time. Here in South Dakota, it's in codified law that parents can spank their children to gain compliance with reasonable requests. Review the codified law. The father is an authority figure, but he can diminish his own influence by being wrong about important issues. In a good family education environment, the parents learn and reinforce, along with the children, who become a familial research team capable of validating claims and contributing to decision-making. Some other points for your consideration. Parents are not simply economic pack horses to bring home currency. Parents are an essential part of child rearing, and their presence improves outcomes. Parents are not simply slaves to their children. Parents must bear the social responsibility for the outcomes of their kids beyond childhood. On the sun-worn steering wheel, he used to honk that horn. This was Papa's truck back then, around the time that he was born. About the time he went to high school, working hard to make his luck, working 12-hour Saturdays at the gas station just to put gas into that truck. And he grew up on the back roads in the cab of that old Ford, getting sideways in them corners and rattling every bedboard. And his mama wanted a lawyer that would love unto the Lord, but his daddy had taught him too well. Now he's running shine in Papa Willie's Ford. One day the sheriff caught them rolling too fast down the line, and that wise-ass little tater tot got his papa's truck stuck in the impound lot from Mr. Ziegler still on down the county line. He needed to make a drop to his cousin Bill under tonight's bright moonshine. And now he's running shine with $100 reward in Papa Willie's Ford.